Spirit Radio Podcasts.
And joined with us in studio now, we have our parenting expert, Katrina Lynch. And this morning, Katrina is going to be talking about a topic. You see, I think it's probably one that as parents, we almost want to avoid, because when we think about it, you know, probably if you're looking at the amount that you use your phone or how your phone distracts you from your children and the precious little time that you have with them, especially when you've two parents working full time, that is not a good thing. And what are we passing on to our children when they see us on our phone, sending that message saying, this thing in my hand is more important than you right now? So we're going to be talking about the impact of that, and then Katrina's going to be giving practical advice on how we can handle that. Good morning to you, Katrina.
Good morning. How are you?
So this is, I suppose, a modern problem in one way, but I'm sure when your children were smaller, there was other distractions that we had or used, you know, like television or whatever. Do you think phones are just replacing that, or are they much, much worse because they're portable and that we're kind of glued to them all the time?
It's much worse. It's a completely different phenomenon. And the thing of it is addictive. Because when we use our phones and when we are engaging with them, there actually is the pleasure hormone is released, dopamine. And so there is an addictive strain to it. And you do see some people who literally break out in sweats because they can't.
They've left their phone at home, for example.
They've left their phone at home or something or other. And we do completely overuse our phones. Knowing that this topic is becoming closer and closer to not necessarily my heart, but the necessity of being alert and aware, I just did a very tiny social experiment there during the week. I happened to be in Funky Monkeys with my grandchildren.
So this is like a big play space in Dublin, in Dundrum.
Yeah. Well, they also have them, or I think it's a franchise. Well, I know they have them up in Belfast, and I think they have them in the south of Ireland as well. But I just happened to be there, and parents can sit at tables and drink coffee and all that kind of thing. And even where there were two adults sitting at a table together, everybody, bar two people, so I'd say there was probably about, I reckon there was about 35 adults in the room, ostensibly watching their children and interacting and playing with their children, but everybody bar two adults were on their phone. And being the nosy creature that I am, and purely in the interest of science, I was peeping over people's shoulders, and they were all on Facebook.
They were not really doing anything Facebook. Important.
Yeah. Indeed. And so the thing of it is, we are just, I have no words for it. When you think about it, what are you looking at in Facebook? I ask it of myself.
So you're missing out on what is happening in real life to look at many people that you probably don't even see on a day-to-day basis. I've seen it, Katrina. And again, this slot is not to kind of sound judgmental and pious about the whole thing, because I've made that mistake too, of being distracted by my phone. But I've seen a dad, you know, pushing a child on a swing, pushing while looking at a phone. And I remember the first time I saw that, I there and then made that decision that when I was in the playground with my son, that I would not, unless I needed to make an emergency phone call or something, I would not use my phone, and I would just sit and watch him play.
Yes.
And it's not boring, I can tell you. It's really quite nice. But I think, is it about that you actually have to make that decision? Because if you don't decide, I'm actually going to be committed to this because it is a temptation. Oh, he's distracted and he's playing. Okay, I can just fiddle on my phone or whatever, send a text message or something. Do we just need to be more disciplined?
We need to make a decision. We need to be aware. Okay, there are three steps in change. There are three steps. And the first step is awareness. And that's really 90% of the change. Because you can't change what you're not aware of.
Do you think people are aware enough the extent of which their phones are taking them away from being with their children, being present?
No, we have no idea. Absolutely none. And if you can figure out, you know, you can even get, you know, an app to tell you how much screen time you're using. And they can give it to you per day or per week. And I get a bit concerned if it's gone over an hour.
Yeah, there's a good week. App, I think it's called Family Moment, which I would recommend, yeah. Which does that, and it kind of tracks your usage.
Yeah, so an hour a week for me would be you know, sufficient. Now, I'm not talking about being on your screen when you're checking your emails and if you're doing something as that is part of your business. But you need to keep that to an office hour kind of time where you do that before you go in to engage with the children. I don't want to sound like Methuselah, but, you know, there was a time when mothers and fathers went to the park and they sat with their children and they read a book, or there was knitting going on, or horror of horrors, there was conversation. And I know the child psychologists are tearing their hair out about this tsunami of non-availability in, you know, in their own space of children.
Wait, and what sort of a message does it send, not only to your children, but perhaps your spouse as well? What impact do you think it's having on children, Katrina, if when they're trying to interact, when they're trying to play, you are on your phone as a parent?
Well, it's basically saying that I'm not present. I'm not here. And it's monkey say, monkey do. Your children will do what you do. And they will adapt the pattern of life that you have. So if you are an adult who is constantly looking at your Facebook, constantly checking your messages, and remember, it is addictive. You're getting this buzz when you look and you see, how many likes did I get? Did somebody else like what I said? You know, oh my goodness, you know, Mary is going to Dubai and there's a picture of her, you know, in the airport having her last drink before she gets on the plane. I mean, raise the roof.
Who cares,
you know? So
as your child literally is growing up right before your very eyes.
And they are going to copy what you do. So what they have learned from you is, this is what one does. This is part and parcel of being a human being.
And as parents, we need to lead by example, as you say. But is it a case of sitting down and having a and making those decisions and making rules for yourself first and foremost? Like, when I am in the playground or when I'm in the play cafe,
exactly,
I will not be on my phone. I will just watch my child. I will relax. I will have some peace in my head or
precisely
whatever.
And that's the second step, which is, after you're being aware, you make very small, specific plans about what you are going to do. And that is precisely it.
So you have to be specific. Would you recommend, and I know something that's worked for us, Katrina, is when we're at the dinner table, absolutely no phones. Pretty much when my husband comes in from work, our phones are on silent, we put them away, and that's the end of it.
Yes.
It's not easy to do overnight, but it takes, I suppose, a habit.
Yes.
Then we started off with that. That was one thing. Then we started off for ourselves. This is when baby was gone to sleep, by the way, saying once we were in bed, finally, at the end of the night, we were not allowed to look at our phones because we wanted to, you know, talk to each other.
Do not charge your phone in your bedroom. Because, you know, you will tend to be looking at it last thing at night. You'll be looking at it first thing in the morning. Just do a little experiment with yourself and make a decision to put your phone away, as you say, Wendy, during mealtime or something or other. Or if you're taking your children out to the park or whatever, going out shopping, make a decision to put your phone away for an hour. Turn it off and put it away.
And you know,
and at the end of that hour, check your phone and see how many really important messages that you needed to deal with in that hour have you received. And if you haven't got a message that is either somebody dying or you're about to lose your job or something really important, you know, like that, you didn't need your phone for that hour.
We'd like to think that we need it. And you know what I find interesting as well, Katrina, is just the knock-on impact. I recommend people try a thing called Silent Sunday, i.e. no phones, phones on silence on a Sunday, and have it as a family day. But that people start to understand, oh, well, Wendy and Carl, after 5:30 in the evening, they put their phones on silence. So they don't expect for you to respond, pick up the phone, all that sort of stuff.
Yes.
What's your advice then for trying to branch that out? For example, I've had to, with my extended family, with the grandparents and stuff, say the same thing, because everyone's in the habit of being on their phone and say, please, don't be on your phone when the baby's around, when we're at the dinner table, or we're having lunch together, or whatever. It's not easy to have those conversations. What's your advice there when it's, okay, you've made the decision and you're being disciplined, but then you go and you've coffee with a friend or you've lunch and they have the phone out. It's really tricky.
It is tricky, but you know, you can't be responsible for what other people are doing. You can only be responsible for yourself. And when you are out with your child and you have put your phone away and you are present to the child, we are human beings. We need to be at times. We're not human doings. And, you know, when your child sees you sitting there on the bench, now I'm not saying don't talk to the person alongside you, don't have a book, you know, don't, but do kind of be looking around and, you know, and as you say, give them a push and be fully integrated with them. They know you are present to them and you are there, and you don't have to be taking a photograph of every time they sit on the swing or every time they plonk themselves on the slide. You know, it's you being present to them, and you're passing on to them the comfort of knowing I'm available and I'm here. You're also teaching them about social skills. As I was saying, we are rearing a generation that it is very noticeable in school at this stage, that children are having more difficulty in this generation integrating and socializing because they are having so much screen time. And they are learning from you, their parents, about the amount of screen time that they give. So it's important that we not only verbally tell our children, it is not good to be looking at a screen all the time. It is better to play, to chat, to read a book, to do a jigsaw puzzle, you know, something or other like that.
And
be on the screen the whole time.
It's what children crave and desire. I was chatting to a friend recently who her son, he's about 7 or 8, going off for a scouts weekend. It was very strict, no phones for anybody. And of course, they all have a blast. You know, the very kids that you think will be given out because they're always on the games and all that sort of stuff. No, they just want to be kids. They just want to play.
Yeah.
So we need to give them that opportunity.
And that's how children learn. They learn through play. And playing a game on a screen is not play. Now, don't get me wrong, you know, I don't want to say that absolutely every single thing about the screen is bad. There are lots of skills and dexterities that we can learn through using the screen as well. Moderation, way, way down the scale. For goodness sake, grab them and play with them. You think it's going to last forever or it's never going to end. It ends very, very quickly.
Very quickly, that's
so
for
enjoy
sure.
It. They're a gift. Use the gift. Open it up. Play with it. Enjoy it. And then you will have the company of those memories and the integration of the relationship that you have developed for the rest of your life, please God.
As always, great advice from our parenting expert, Katrina Lynch, who joins us in studio at the same time every Thursday. Well, it seems that a day doesn't go by where there isn't some sort of housing or property related story in the newspapers. Today, it was all about the reality that there's many, many houses that could actually be used by the local councils because these are vacant, they're not being used, and they could be bought through compulsory purchase orders as a way to ease the social housing crisis. So there's many properties that have nobody living in them when there could be a family put into those houses. So quite frustrating when we're looking at the number of homelessness people. Another issue that was in the newspapers this week is looking at mortgage rates. It was a good news story saying that the ECB rate looks like it's not going to go up, but still couching that is the reality that Ireland, our mortgage rates here are among the highest in Europe. Figures from the central bank show the average rate charged on new mortgages here over the past year was 3.21%. Now, when you compare that to other countries in the EU, I think it's around 1.8%, and that amounts to literally tens of thousands of euro over the lifetime of your mortgage. So what's going to happen here in Ireland? Are we ever going to feel the impact of the fact that ECB rates are low? Well, on the line to chat to us about this and give us some of his thoughts on these stories, we have Carl Dieter of Irish Mortgage Brokers. Good morning, Carl. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Well, let's start off with that story. Obviously, when you see a story in relation to Eurozone rates, it's great for those who are on tracker mortgage, about 300,000 people, but they don't exist anymore. So we're not going to feel the knock-on effect of it, or are we?
Well, what will happen is that typically when you see rates coming down and kind of staying down, the banks will actually start to lower their lending rates as well. And that's something that you have to realize. It doesn't exist in isolation. So I think that mortgage rates will be good for Irish people for quite some time. Now, you can't get a tracker anymore. That's just the way it goes. Having said that, you can actually get trackers to this day in Spain. So they're not extinct everywhere. They're just gone here.
And that's, I suppose, one thing that's been, I know, talked about by various different analysts and different politicians, kind of saying, why can't other mortgage providers from other European banks come into Ireland and say, okay, avail of these lower rates that you can't get here in Ireland?
They absolutely can. Of course they can. In fact, there's a new European directive. It's not new at all, actually. It's been going through for quite some time, which makes it allowable for lenders from anywhere to come in Europe and lend money here. The truth is, and the thing that you probably won't hear too often, is that they choose not to. And the reason is that apart from the size of the Irish market, the opportunity here, and the very high margins that banks here make, that there's enough downsides that go along with that that mean they'd rather just stay where they are.
So it's not worth their while. Is there a way we can make it worth their while?
Well, yes, but it's going to be upsetting to a lot of people. The way you make it worth their while is you adopt a system like what they have in Denmark, where if you miss three payments, they repossess your house. We don't want that. And that's one of the issues that put lenders off working in Ireland, is that we have some of the most comprehensive consumer protections in the world. And that makes lending to Irish households far riskier than it is in other places.
At various times over the last number of months, Carl, you know, different politicians have said, oh, we need to put pressure on the banks to get them to lower their mortgage rates in line with Europe. Is that actually going to happen in practical terms? I mean, the government can't really intervene from a competitive point of view.
Yeah, well, they did in the past. Enda Kenny called all the banks in and said, lower your rates. And AIB did, because they're government controlled and government owned. All the other banks said, no, we'll actually do what we believe is the right thing for the bank. So that call was largely ignored. Something that a lot of the politicians do, though, is they read a report that says rates are higher here than in Europe, and they start jumping up and down. They don't bother to do the full level of research on it. And the fact is that when you get a mortgage in many parts of Europe, you might have a 1,500 euro arrangement fee, which the bank charge you. You might have certain requirements to do your financial products through that bank, which makes it more expensive. So, again, you've got to look at the total cost of ownership. And when you factor in things like upfront costs that other banks would have, a good example would be Spain. You know, they've all these different stamp duties, taxes, et cetera, that all go into it. The amount that comes out of your pocket in order to buy a home is fairly similar. In Ireland, it's all built into the mortgage rate. In other countries, they get you in roundabout ways, but you still end up paying.
So you need to, as you say, you kind of have to look at all things considered and all the various different stamp duties, etc., etc. So that's a really important point. It's easy to jump up and down, but actually look at the bottom line is what really matters. Just a question in for you, Carl, you might be able to answer. Someone saying, I'm living in the same property, but the property has gone up quite a lot in value in the last 2 years. I chatted to the bank and they said that they can't lower the loan to value rate. Is this the case?
Well, if they can't, find a bank who can. Talk to your local mortgage broker. I'd be happy if they call us. If you don't, there's loads of great ones out there. If a bank won't give you a better deal, the best way to solve that isn't to sit there and say, golly, why won't they deal with me better? Just leave them. Talk with your feet. Walk out the door. Go down the street. Find a better deal and do it with them. In fact, a lot of banks will actually give you 2% cash back on your loan. So if you were to get a loan of 200,000 euro, you'll actually be better off by 4,000 euro and the better rate, which will save you thousands over the life of the loan.
Yeah, so we have this kind of false sense of loyalty or an idea that it's going to be really difficult to have to switch or negotiate when perhaps it isn't.
Well, look, mortgages are an administrative and bureaucratic process. As long as you know that in advance, it's the same as going for your driving test. You know that there's certain headaches that go with getting the qualification or whatever the end result is that you want. Just be aware of it. It takes a bit of time, but you're living there. It's not like you're under any pressure to have to get it done straight away. Start the process, go through it, save money, get money back. I mean, this is a win-win situation. Don't let your own inertia stop you from being financially better off. Because if you wouldn't walk down the street and give a stranger 4,000 euro, then why do you choose to give your bank that kind of money?
Well, speaking of inertia, I wanted to ask you about another story which was on the front page of the Irish Independent today, which was just looking at the number of vacant houses that could possibly be used as social housing, but local authorities haven't bought up these unused properties. What's your reaction to that story, Carl?
It's one of expected dismay. That's just kind of the way it goes. There's a thing called a compulsory purchase order, and local authorities actually have the ability to buy houses should they want to, just go out and take them, especially in the case of derelict and dangerous housing. And while we hear of all these old houses that aren't being used, Occupy the City, we're looking at jumping into some of them. People put them up on maps. There's constant outcries. The local authorities have not been very quick about actually going in and exercising the power that we gave them to take over certain properties that are completely derelict and completely dangerous. And yet if something happened in those properties, people would probably end up suing the local authority. So that's why we give them this permission. We want them, I believe most people want them, to take obviously vacant places that might have questionable ownership or quite often are owned by them and turn them into housing, and they haven't been doing it.
I know, Carl, you were recently speaking at a conference that Threshold were holding. What were your kind of thoughts on that day? Was there concrete proposals or things that really the government should be taking on board that they're not?
There was a lot of things, yeah. And Threshold has been around for 40 years, so it's important to remember that tenant issues are not a new thing. Housing crises are not a new thing. We just have our own version of it, and we think it's this new idea. It's not. That's why Threshold just turned 40. They were required back then, they're required today. But one thing that I did think was very interesting, and something that nobody ever wants to talk about, is the fact that we have thousands of homes right here in Dublin where the housing crisis is the worst, where the homelessness crisis is the worst, and they're owned by the state, and they're council homes where just one person is living in a 2, 3, 4, and even 5-bedroom home. And then you've also got one-bed apartments where you've got a family of five in them. You've got hotel rooms where a family of five are being thrown in emergency accommodation. To me, it would be obvious that we should swap those people out. Now, there's flesh and blood human beings on the end of that. They might not be too happy to hear about that. But my solution there would be, if you want subsidized housing, if you want a council house, and you want to occupy a 5-bed house on your own or a 4-bed house on your own, then pay the full market rate so you can in some way help compensate the local authority for the money that they're spending elsewhere to keep a family of five in a 1-bed apartment.
It's another kind of common sense issue that doesn't seem to be prevailing, unfortunately, at the moment. Carl, thanks so much for joining us on the programme, giving us your thoughts on some of those issues this morning. That's Carl Dieter of Irish Mortgage Brokers. Well, it is that time of the week for our Life in 5 interview, that time where we chat to ordinary people who have extraordinary stories. And my next guest certainly has an extraordinary life story in terms of how she got to Ireland and where her life has gone from there. We do it by getting them to say, hey, will you pick from a list of questions, pick 5 of them, and hopefully we learn a little bit about them in that way. And with me in studio, I have Vanessa Diana Manyunga. Good morning to you, Vanessa. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine.
Well, before we get to your questions, just tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, I'm Vanessa Manyunga and I'm 28. I'm a professional actress. I'm a host, a journalist, and I recently graduated in media production management from DCU.
So I know that we'll probably hear in your questions a little bit about how you came to be in Ireland, but you might just tell us first just a little bit about when you came here. I think you were 11.
I was, yeah. I was actually smuggled in because I couldn't get a visa by natural route. I couldn't because I was an orphan and I had lost both parents, and my brother was also gone. I had 2 brothers, so my youngest brother also died, and my older brother was about 13 when he passed away. So that was very tough for me, and I started getting sick, so I had to move out of the country because the Congo is a third world country, so there's a lot of poverty, a lot of crime, war, and because I had to flee in 1997 from a war in the Congo, so that's how bad it is. So yeah, and I had to come here, And my half sister at the time was here. She started a family, so she
That's why she was able to try and get you to Ireland because you had that connection to Ireland.
Exactly. Yeah.
But you were just 11 years old.
I was only 11. Yeah. And the trip was meant to last for 3 days, but it was over a month, and it was the longest trip ever. We had to go through Zambia, Zimbabwe, London, and then I got here, and it was very hard and challenging. Because I had to face a lot. And during that time, I didn't realize how dangerous it was.
And were you by yourself?
No, I wasn't. I had a lady with me who was on her 30s, I think. And there was two other girls with me. They were older. One was about my age. But yeah, it was just hard because, say, in Zambia, I had to sometimes... I went to the club, for example, with the lady who was with me, when I knew that I wasn't allowed to be in a club. I was only 11, turning 12. And just because my parents weren't there and I was under her supervision and I didn't have a say, but I knew that it was wrong. And witnessing the things that I have witnessed was a bit shocking.
Yeah. We'll probably hear more in your questions about your story.
Yeah.
So let's start with your questions. The first is a favorite Bible verse and why?
Yeah. Because I speak French, so I'll say in French. It is Psalm 37:25. J'étais jeune, j'ai vieilli et je n'ai jamais vu un juste abandonné ni sa génération mendiant du pain. So that is, I have been young and now I'm old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken nor his seed begging bread. I love it because it is a motivation to always do the right thing. And even if you are doing the right thing and you get a negative backlash for it, people are maybe ungrateful towards you, it just gives you the confidence to be at peace with yourself, knowing
that... Because you know you're doing the right thing.
You're doing the right thing. And at the end of the day, if you're righteous, you will be okay. So that's the reason why I'm in love with the chapter.
Yeah, it's a good piece of scripture to go by. You have, as you said in the start, Vanessa, you're multi-talented in terms of the study you're doing, the work you're doing. How does God help you in your work?
Yeah, God helps me in many ways. And I try to live my life by the Ten Commandments. I really strive to do that, not to envy, not to be jealous. And God helps me to just remain unique and to remain authentic, not to try to... try to be like everyone else,
which is hard when you're an actor.
Yeah it is very tough in this day and age when we have Instagram telling us how to look perfect and how to have so many followers. And I just try not to fall into that, and the Bible really helps me in being very confident in just knowing that I am different and there's a purpose for that. It's to add more, not to just be like everyone else, but it is to add to the world. So it helps me in that sense.
Helps you know who you are.
Exactly. And
your next question is, have you ever seen a miracle?
Yeah, I am a miracle. I feel I am blessed because if I am the only one left from my restrained family, I feel I am a miracle. And just as we said earlier, my life hasn't been ordinary. And being here is a miracle because before I got here, it was so tough. And at the airport in London, the personnel at the checkpoint, for example, he was asking me lots of questions. I didn't know how to speak English. I had no idea how to say anything. And it was just by miracle that he actually... just closed my passport. It's like he showed us the exit door. It's like, okay, it's by God's grace and it is by his mercy that that I got here. And even getting to go to college and get all the diplomas and degree that I've got without having the supervision of parent. And I see miracles in every little thing.
In just a little thing of
helpful. Yeah, in life.
Which is an amazing way to look at it, Vanessa, because you're, I mean, having lost your family,
yeah,
somebody could look at it in a different way and be very bitter and angry with God, but you see it as a blessing that you're here, and that's really inspirational, actually.
Yeah, and that's where God comes in, because if I wasn't a believer, I believe I would be bitter and I would be hating on others, be jealous of every parent walking on the street with their child. I will be jealous of that, because it's, you have all the pain that you carry with you. But because of my belief and my spirituality, it really helps to just see a different side of things, you know. And so God has helped me in that sense to remain positive.
I loved your answer. I am a miracle indeed. Sure, we all are. What about your next question, which is a testing time in your life?
Well, testing time. It was during my pregnancy when I got pregnant, and yeah, that was very challenging, because I was still in college. I didn't finish, and I had only moved out, so financially I wasn't great. And that's when I used to always listen to the spirit radio. And it was very challenging. And even in the midst of that, I still kind of kept my hope alive. And I was just striving to do well and to be excellent in everything that I do. So I had a child, and she has been my motivation to get my distinctions. Because before having her, I didn't do that well in school. I was just...
So the very thing you thought might hold you back has pushed you on.
She pushed me forward. I started getting distinctions because I wanted to do well for her. I wanted her to have a better life. I wanted her to see a good example so I can be an inspiration to her. So I started working twice as hard, having many sleepless nights. And then I finished. I got... mostly distinctions for my journalism course, and I got 2.1 on my degree, my BA honors degree in media production management, which was amazing, because I'm like, wait a minute, I have a child and I'm raising her and I'm hosting shows, I'm doing a bit of acting, and I have a full-time college that I attend, and I still got among the highest. So that was amazing to just see, like, to look back and see how I thought it was my life that was being ruined by this pregnancy. And
the opposite has been the case.
The opposite happened. So I'm very grateful for my daughter's life.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for sharing that lovely story. Your last question, Vanessa, what makes you happy?
What makes me happy? Right. I love making people happy. I love lifting people up. I love making everyone feel like a somebody. So every time I host a show, every time I'm on Facebook, I usually record inspirational videos, just trying to promote positivity and trying to bring out issues that may impact our lives. And all that, it is just in the effort of trying to get people in a space where they can think better or think differently or see things differently or just be the best individual they can be in life. Because I noticed that a lot of times when we grow up in a certain place, and our vision is kind of limited because we see the same kind of people. We
don't see outside of that.
Exactly, outside the box. So I try to kind of just open the windows for everyone to see outside the box and be like, here, look at this. This can be different, and you can do this differently, and you can get a positive response.
And your life experience is a testament to that philosophy, that's for sure.
Yeah, yes, it is. Yeah.
Thank you so much. We've been chatting to Vanessa Manunga this morning, sharing a little bit about her life and her story. She'd been our Life in 5 guest this morning. Vanessa, if people want to check you out on your Facebook page and all those lovely videos you're talking about,
yes,
how can they do that?
Yes, well, I'm on Facebook, the short type. My second name is a bit awkward. Vanessa Manunga, it's M-A-N-U-N-G-A, and on Instagram as well.
Fantastic. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to our Spirit Radio podcast. Don't miss out. Subscribe today. Find out how at spiritradio.ie.